Hello, everyone. This is BL Allison. As usual, Elena has a lot of information packed into her webinar, so she asks that you please hold all of your questions until the end. Okay, let me turn it over to her and she'll do her meditation.
Okay.
Yeah, put that up. We can't see it yet. There we go. That's good.
Okay, just a moment. Okay. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome. We will start, as usual, with a short alignment of the group field. So, please quieten your lower energies. And focus the attention in the head. And imagine the light of the soul pouring through the mental body integrating the personality. Illuminating first the mental body with a white golden light, and we sound the Om, confirm this illumination. Om. Purifying the astral body, and strengthening the etheric body. And we visualize the three lower bodies, the threefold personality, as being unified with the white light. Now, personality soul fusion. See the lower triangle representing the personality with the mental body at the apex of the triangle, and the physical and astral bodies at the base. And the apex of the triangle is pointing upwards. Above the lower triangle, see the brightly lit higher triangle representing the soul, with the apex of the triangle pointing downwards. And by an act of the will, see these two triangles merging together and forming a six-pointed star. See the six-pointed star as a shining sun, representing the soul-infused personality. and sound the silent Om to confirm this fusion. Group alignment. Visualize a sphere of pure white light and the group members as a miniature shining suns inside and around the sphere. See a sphere of light linking the heart centers of all the group members. A sphere of light linking the head centers. And a sphere of light linking the Ajna centers of all the group members. Imagine the light rapidly circulating through these three spheres. And aligning the three group centers, Ajna, heart, and head. Into one mind, one soul, and one will. To confirm the group alignment, we sound the Om as a group. Thank you, everybody. And BL, please, you can bring the NATO chart of CDP on the screen. As big as possible.
Okay, that's as good as I can get.
Okay, fine. And now, first, I will share with you my understanding of some of the other aspects and initiating processes starting at this third stage of the six stages of discipleship called accepted discipleship, which this disciple was entering in that life, and for which he was taking the final test of fitness, which we have discussed already in previous webinar. Okay, so there are this stage. We can say it's the most important on the path of accepted discipleship, because technically speaking, we can say that this is the emergence of a true accepted disciple. And so all the processes which we're going through at this stage and which are initiated at this stage are very important. So the technique of fusion starts to be used at this stage, in addition to the technique of integration, and both start to work together until the third initiation with the emergence of the soul-infused integrated personality. Okay? We have already seen that she has already utilized both of these techniques of integration and the technique of fusion when she started to build her garden. Now, the master begins to take over the training of a disciple here, who is now fully ready because he or she has reached the point where the disciple, as DK say, can enter into the light of the angel. It means the soul contact is start to be stabilizing and becoming conscious in expression and recognition. The new group of world service starts functioning as a transforming agent or station, enabling the accepted disciple to move from a periphery of the ashram towards its center. And this is a process, basically, you know, which is going on until the third initiation, when that stabilization in the center, which is the heart of the ashram, where we found the master. Now, the disciple knows that he lacks love at this, up to this point, because he is not identifying with the soul in others and being critical of other people. At this stage, he starts to ponder and meditate upon the meaning and significance of love, its origin and its expression through the soul, and thus initiate a process of developing a loving in a spontaneous, detached way, detached love of the soul. And I recommend you to read the passage, which is found in Dina 1, page 735-736, where DK is speaking about this stage 3 of accepted discipleship, and is discussing there the distinction between love and will to love. And I recommend you compare this passage with the instruction he has given CDP in June 1934, which is on page 507 in Dina 1. And you will find some fundamental relations confirming she was entering this stage. A real preparation for the second initiation is consciously undertaken at this stage, because by then integration has been stabilized to that degree that the disciple is ready to subject himself to hierarchical impression and to absorb with profit the radiation of the hierarchy, and thus enabling the accepted disciple now to take the second initiation. Because we need to realize that at the fourth stage of the six stages of discipleship is called the Chela on a Thread which the disciple reaches as the second degree initiate. Okay? The Ajna Center becomes a focal point of development here. And when it is connected with the Throat Center, it indicates an active use of creative imagination. As we have seen, she was utilizing in building of her garden, a creative process. The Ajna has also close relation with the Heart Center, which at this stage is brought into greater activity through the involvement in a group work and group service. Because the Heart Center expresses the group love. During this stage, we're going also through a transition process, which is initiated at this stage from the mystical to occult consciousness. The mystical consciousness, or that innate sensitivity which leads to higher vision and culminates in taking of the second initiation, represented by Neptune and the sixth ray. Towards the occult consciousness, or that intelligent fusing condition which produces the scientific advancement of the higher and lower self through the intelligent use of the mind under the fifth ray, Venus, which represent also the intelligent love, and culminating in taking of the third initiation, where the path of accepted discipleship as a whole comes to the end, and there is emergence of an initiate. Now, from the perspective of astrology, the esoteric rulership starts to consciously be used and operate during this stage. Prior to this stage, it was primarily the exoteric rulership which was operating. Okay? From this point, both the esoteric and exoteric rulership start to work together, with the esoteric rulership achieving now more conscious recognition and utilization. Now, at this point, there is something which probably is for many of you new, that the energies of the intercepted signs start to be consciously utilized in relation to the houses of the intercepted signs. And the houses ruled by the same signs, which would emerge as a result of the interception, would be directly related to this process. Now you see, in the case of CDP, the interception of Gemini Sagittarius, BL is pointing the axis across the 6-12 houses. It means intercepted signs have no cusp. Okay? That would be related to the Cancer Capricorn, which we have two polarities of houses, okay? From 1 to 7, ICDC, and 2-8. So all these energies need to be considered together. Okay? When there is involvement of the ascendant, as is the case with this disciple, a Cancer ascendant, it indicates immediately an important development in the life of the soul. Now, in the last webinar, there was a question about retrograde planets. So I thought it would be good to examine how retrograde planets worked in CDP chart, because retrograde planets have to be considered together with these intercepted signs. The nodal axis, as you see, the nodal axis she has across the 10-4 polarity from Pisces to Virgo. Also the planet Chiron, which you see there in Aries, which has its relation to Virgo in its adjusting energies, and Sagittarius in adjusting the direction and guidance, and is the most important planet in adjusting, integrating, and directing processes. Okay? The nodes, the moon nodes, are related to contacts with the soul, the spiritual triad through building of the antakarana, and also contact with the soul and the master through karmic relations. Thus, the moon nodes not only influence the karma, but also the inner and outer contacts. So when we look at her natal chart, we see she has been born with retrograde Jupiter in Sagittarius, and Uranus in Sagittarian decanate of Leo on the cusp of the third house. And this gives us immediately a first hint of a close relations between these two planets, because they both rule the Aquarian house, nine house, where Uranus is the exoteric ruler and Jupiter the esoteric ruler. And the ninth house, among other many other things, is connected with the quest for higher knowledge, the truth, abstract mind, and I will mention publishing, because she came from a very wealthy publishing family. Now, Jupiter is a very important planet for her as the second ray soul ruler, because she has a second ray soul. And it is, as you see, in its retrograde placement there, in a sixth house of adjustment, purification, health, service, healing, and application of various techniques and formulas in discipleship training. So it is a very important placement for this planet in that house. Now, when a planet retrograde or direct changes houses or signs, it always retains its primary focal energy anchored at the time of birth. So for Jupiter, it would be the sign of Sagittarian energy and the sixth house area which I have mentioned some of its qualities and actions. And for Uranus, it would be the sign Leo, and primarily the second house, even though being placed at such a closed cusp between the second and third, it operates in both houses. And when we have a planet placed in such a closed cusp placement, we're taking a 5-degree orb, which operates 2.5 degree from either side of the houses. Okay? Now, we need to, the quadra wheel now. BL, please.
Okay, hold on.
With the date of the 27th March, the year 1889. Okay? I would just bring a point here that BL has no minutes in the planets, only the degrees. Okay? But I will be mentioning those minutes, so because they are important. Okay? So her Jupiter retrograde remains retrograde from the birth until her death in 1940. That's where she died. That was her year of death. So the retrograde motion of this planet stay the same, retrograde. But in March 27, 1889, it started to retrograde from Sagittarius to the sign Scorpio, and thus indicating she had to face a very important test in that Scorpio, which is a Scorpio not only rules the path of discipleship, but it is the major testing sign. Okay? We are learning very important, we're getting important information through this exercise looking at the integrated planets, because we are learning a deeper meaning and significance why a particular planet is either changing motion, sign, or houses. Because if that Jupiter was turning direct in her life, it would never enter Scorpio, and it would not enter her most important house, and that is the fifth house. Okay? Now, BL, if you can bring the wheel to the year 1905.
What month?
February.
Okay.
February 2. Have you got that?
Yes. February 2, 1905.
1905, February, from the 2nd to the 3rd, the progressed retrograde Jupiter in Scorpio is moving from the 6th into the 5th house. Okay? So if you move the date that the Jupiter is found in the 5th house, just the day.
That's
okay?
It. I did. I moved it forward one day.
Okay, thank you. So this is a very important transition for the retrograde planet. Okay? The fifth house, again, has a many, many energetic levels, but I'm mentioning the one which are important to this process, which we would find is important. It is the creative imagination area which she was already utilizing in her garden building. The creative and procreative activity, it means it is the house of children. And the expression of the lower and higher self, it is also the house of the causal body. Okay? And all the qualities which we accumulate through all our incarnations. Up to this point, obviously, for this disciple. As you see, that the natal moon is placed in Scorpio, in that fifth house. Okay? And it is in the degree of Scorpio, which is the fourth test of Scorpio, dealing with fear, which was her major blocking energy. Okay? So the movement of that retrograde Jupiter into this area in Scorpio is significant. Okay? Being her second ray soul planet. Now, if you bring the chart now, BL, in the year 1913, June 1st, okay, we will find the progressed retrograde Jupiter at 27 Scorpio 08. Now you don't see the 08 there, okay? But that is important, you know, to see, you know, the exact opposition to the progressed Sun in 27 Taurus 08. And it is obviously conjuncting the progressed Earth in the 27 Scorpio 08. Okay? We're talking about exact conjunction or an opposition to the Sun. Okay? Now the planet Earth is the ruler of the Gemini Sagittarius intercepted polarity of signs. Okay? And this is linking Jupiter to its original placement in Sagittarius in the sixth house. Okay? Through the Sun, through the progressed Sun, the Jupiter is related to the retrograde Uranus in Leo, which the Sun ruling on all levels, ruling the third house, where the Uranus is on the cusp of that house. And the third house is related to the immediate environment, mental processes, and various methods of communication. At the same time, the progressed retrograde Jupiter makes an exact aspect to the progressing node axis across the 410 houses in 27 Virgo Pisces 08. So we have another important relation now to the nodes. And the transiting Chiron is going over the MCIC angle. Pisces, Virgo, where the Chiron in relation to Virgo is relating now to the adjustment in discrimination and in factual knowledge. And Sagittarius in adjustment in a future direction. Now in June 12th, in the same year, BL, June 12th,
same date, June 12th, same year. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Hold on.
Yes.
There.
Same year, but a different day, June 12th. We see the progressed ascendant in 2 degrees Leo 17, reaching an exact square to the natal Neptune in 2 degrees Taurus 17. Now, Neptune is her most important planet because it's the esoteric ruler of her Cancer ascendant, indicating the soul purpose. It is also the ruler of Dharma, Pisces, midheaven, which is in Cancer decanate of Pisces, where Neptune is also the soul ruler. And it is placed in 11th house, the Neptune, which is an area related to various groups, organization, externalization of spiritual hopes and wishes. As I said, I am mentioning these particular points to the houses for a special reason here, which is going to emerge when I tell you why. Now, the progressed Sun-Earth axes are also falling in this 5-11, linking the progressed retrograde Jupiter to these axes in that fifth house. Okay? Now, we are very fortunate to have information that in June, which we are considering, and the year 1913, which we are considering here, with all this significant relationship, she and her husband, which is here symbolized by the progressed sun in that 11th house, established the Theosophical Lodge of Willington, where they both lived. Okay? So all the qualities of the houses which I mentioned are relating to this process. Okay? Which was very important happening in her life. Okay? Now, could you bring the wheel to the year 1931, November 10? We there?
Yes.
Okay. So, as you know, this was the month and a year of her first instruction given by DK to her, okay? And when we look at the fifth house, the progressing moon through Scorpio is making an exact conjunction with the retrograde Jupiter in 24 Scorpio 52 in the fifth house. Okay. Again, we have two moons here now. The natal moon is also in Scorpio, in the fifth house. And so there is immediate link here between the progressing Moon-Jupiter conjunction, indicating the importance of Scorpio and the fifth house. Even though CDP met or was in contact with DK prior to this instruction, the process already started, but this was the official sort of starting point or anchoring point, okay, where he, started to take her training on using the techniques and formulas in the process of training, which is the primary function of that Jupiter in the sixth house. Okay? Now, we know that the moon is not only her exoteric ruler of the Cancer ascendant, which prior to this stage was the main operating energy of that Cancer ascendant. It is also the ruler of the Cancer decanet of the Pisces midheaven, Dharma, linking the ascendant to the Dharma, sole purpose, duty, obligation. It is also the esoteric ruler of the Virgo IC or fourth house, which is related to the ashram and the master. So here is initiating process under the training of the master and her approaching the ashram. Jupiter is also the exoteric ruler of the Piscean Dharma, okay, of the Sagittarius intersected in that sixth house, and also the esoteric ruler of the ninth house of the higher mind, the direction upon the path towards a higher knowledge, and training under the direction of the master through utilization of those various techniques to bring the personality under the control of the soul, utilization of the creative imagination, and in constructing of the Antahkarana, which is represented by the 3-9 house polarity. And there we see the significance also of that second retrograde planet, Uranus. Okay? She was learning to relate to those she loved as souls, not as personalities, and primarily those she loved. And so bringing the soul love into creative expression and seeing her children not as personalities but as souls and relating to them as souls. And that's why her children represented the testing ground for her, the moon in Scorpio. And so does both houses, the fifth and sixth, are utilized here from different perspective. At the same time, November 10, 1931, where we are, the solar arc Jupiter at 24 Capricorn, 52, is in exact sextile to the progress Moon-Jupiter conjunction in 24 Scorpio 52. And this bring a relation to the Capricorn now, through the placement of the solar arc Jupiter in Capricorn, leading us to the Capricorn 7 and 8 houses, which are ruled by Capricorn. And the solar arc Jupiter is in the 8th house. Okay? This brings also relation the other angles, like the ascendant descendant with the moon and Jupiter in Capricorn. Okay? So we have IC, ascendant descendant, MC, IC, again related here. Okay? Now, I would like to sort of bring more into attention here our intersected signs in relation to the retrograde planets, because they have slightly different processes but related to each other. Retrograde planets are moving inward, contacting the inner levels, the soul levels here, which need to be utilized in order to harmonize, balance, adjust the form or the personality to the soul. And it is the soul which is the adjusting energy. Okay? Now, the intersected signs represents the spiritual or inner levels of energies, particularly for this disciple, the soul level, which are not used or consciously recognized or expressed. That's why they have no cusps. And thus need to be brought up into conscious expression. And then we can say symbolically these energies of the intercepted signs are anchored by the degrees on the cusp of the houses. But this necessarily would require a new chart and a new incarnation for this disciple. Okay, and it would depend to what degree she will manage to bring this unrecognized, consciously unused spiritual energies, you know, to a full outer expression. So you see these retrograde planets and intercepted signs, how they are working more like in a different direction, but they are working together. There is a powerful relation between them, as we are recognizing through the aspects of the progressed solar arc planets nodes added to it. Okay? So, looking at the intercepted signs across those houses and taking the 1728 houses polarity together through the Cancer Capricorn and Gemini Sagittarius relationship, we find in relation to the retrograde Jupiter that this planet is actually related to all these signs, being the ruler of Sagittarius. It has its detriment in Gemini, its exaltation in Cancer, and its fall in Capricorn. So we have another powerful relationship which needs to be examined in detail in relation to all these houses and signs on top of all the other aspects happening at the same time in the whole chart. Okay? And this, through this process, we are mainly concerned with these fundamental areas of the retrograde planets in relation to the nodal axis and to the intercepted signs and houses in relation to them. Now, it is interesting. Would you, BL, bring the chart to the year 1906, 20 January?
There you go.
Thank you. Now, it is interesting that the solar arc Jupiter was just entering the sign Capricorn. You see there at 00 degree, Capricorn 05. At the date 20 January 1906. And this indicates that the signs and houses of the solar arc progressing planets are operating and need to be considered together with the rest of the chart, because there is some uncertainty if they operate or not. Now you see why 20 January 1906 this Jupiter start to enter the sign ruling the seventh house, because this is the day and year when she got married. That's the significance of the Jupiter entering that sign of Capricorn. We also note at that day the Uranus by transit on the cusp of that seventh house, and Uranus by solar arc progression at the cusp of the fourth house. That brings the Jupiter in relation to the Uranus, both retrograde planets natally. Okay? Now, I don't want to go into any detail, you know, enlargement of this placement, only bringing to your attention to that Uranus, you know, that generally when Uranus is found in a seventh house, you know, there is divorce. Not in this case. It means completely different, but and that's why that Uranus is so powerful at the day of her marriage. Okay, that it would take quite some elaboration and including some other points in the chart. What is important for this exercise is to see the relation between these two planets being involved, which have been the only two planets retrograde at her birth. Okay? Now, would you please bring the chart at 6 November 1931, which we basically going into the same month and the year of the first instruction, which, you know, is discussed in great details in one of the previous webinars. Okay? What I am pointing out now is the solar arc Pluto at 16 Cancer 07, making exact sesquiquadrate to the natal retrograde, Jupiter in 1 degree Sagittarius 07. And Pluto and Jupiter are the rulers of Pisces, midheaven. Okay? And Pluto is also one of the rulers of Scorpio. So you see that exact connection between the solar arc Pluto to the natal retrograde Jupiter is significant because it is emphasizing the same relationship to that Scorpio area of the fifth house. Okay? Linking the natal and progressed energies together. Now, staying in the same year, 1931, could you bring it to the June 23? Still the same instruction.
There you go.
Transiting Jupiter in 24 Cancer activates the solar arc Jupiter at 24 Capricorn, right? Also the progressed Venus at 24 Cancer in the second house. You see the alignment there? Venus being the ruler of the Libra fifth house, very important planet. In 24 Cancer 55 and making an exact trine to the progressed retrograde Jupiter in 24 Scorpio 55. In that fifth house. It is bringing also the fifth and second house into relationship, obviously, through the Jupiter-Uranus placement. Okay? And through that Venus placement there, in aspect to that retrograde Jupiter. And you see, you have to appreciate the exactness I have brought up for you here of the aspects on a particular day and a year happening, which were of significance, like this first instruction given by the master. Okay? And in that first instruction, you know, DK was telling her to achieve an inner poise, Libra energy. And he was pointing out some of her qualities accumulated in her causal body. Not saying so, but implying so, which is ruled by the fifth house. Okay? Which she has already acquired through previous incarnation, such as knowledge, sympathy, understanding, selflessness, loyalty to the cause of occult truth. Now, occult, the word occult is leading us immediately from the Jupiter to the retrograde Uranus, the planet of occult mind, on the cusp of the third house, representing the occult mind. Okay? Now, focusing now more on the Uranus as the second retrograde planet, is in 15 degrees Sagittarian decanet of Leo 54. Okay? And we saw the link to that Jupiter and Sagittarius, being in Sagittarius, and Uranus is in Sagittarian decanate. Okay? So you see the further relationship to that Jupiter in Sagittarius at birth. And Jupiter-Uranus rulership of the 3-9 houses polarity emphasize the occult truth and its development, where I mentioned the transition from the mystical to the occult consciousness at this third stage of accepted discipleship. Now, Uranus in Leo is in its detriment. It's indicating the lessening of the power of mind, symbolized by Uranus, and increasing power of the soul, starting to use and to control the mind. Soul-mind alignment, soul-mind infusion. Okay? Now, you don't need to bring this year up. I will just make a statement. Everybody who is interested can find that out. That Uranus retrograde, from retrograde, turned to direct in the year 1888 and entered the third house in the year 1920 and stayed in direct motion until her death in 1940. And this is the process, among others, indicating the development of the occult mind, which DK already mentioned, you know, her recognition of the occult truth. And truth is related to Sagittarius and the ninth house. Now, Uranus was very active at the time of her father's death, which we are fortunate to have, and which is 26 November, BL, 1904.
There you go.
Okay. Where we see the transiting Saturn in Aquarius was in the eighth house of death. And you know, the eighth house is very important in relation to, you know, to the various points and houses. Okay. And Saturn is the ruler of Capricorn, being in a Capricorn house. And is in opposition to the natal and progressed Uranus in the second house of finance. And also is ruler of the Aquarian ninth house of publishing. Uranus, I mean, okay? Her father was the head of a very wealthy family in publishing business. And after his death, the family had to deal with finance, legacies, and the last will, represented by the 2-8 house polarity. Okay? So that Uranus retrograde natally and direct by progression has to be still in that second house. Even it's operating in both houses at his death was fulfilling a very important function, being still in that second house. Okay? Because the third house, you know, had to be influenced too, because there were so many signing of documents happening at that time. Okay? Just to mention one aspect. Now, financial responsibilities represented an important testing ground for this disciple. That is why the choice of her soul was to put her into financial circumstances. You see that powerful Taurus Scorpio energies in relation not only to the signs, but also to the houses, and to deal with family relationships. Cancer, powerful Cancer. Cancer Capricorn, polarity. You see? Now, in the same date of the death, the solar arc Uranus in 13 Virgo 45, exactly on the cusp of the fourth house, obviously opposition to the midheaven, is related to the family business and her father as the head of the family, the MC, and fourth house family and the end of life. So we see another significance of the Uranian energy there. And that was my very important rectifying point of that Uranus to come to the exact degree of the MCIC angles at the day of his death. Okay? Now, the transiting Uranus is in Sagittarius, in a sixth house. You see how these important houses are coming up at the important happenings in her life. And it is going over the solar arc Jupiter at 28 Sagittarius, 58. And it is also activating the progress Moon-Jupiter conjunction at 28 Cancer, decanate of Scorpio, in the sixth house, or Virgo house, which among other things deals with health issues at this point of his death. And brings into relation the Virgo fourth house, Pisces 10th house, Aquarian house, through the involvement of the transiting Uranus in Sagittarius. Again, the same houses are coming into focal points. And also to the intercepted signs, okay? Because Gemini is related to the Gemini house, the third house, okay? Sagittarius, you know, to the ninth house, and to the planet Jupiter, and the houses 6 and 12, Pisces, Virgo, MCIC polarity of relinquishment, renunciation, adjustment, and end of life cycle. Now, that Uranus in Sagittarius decanate of Leo in the second house is also related to prana, vitality. We know she had a serious devitalized condition, which we discuss in great details in previous webinars. And this brings Uranus into relation to the intercepted sign Gemini and Earth as the ruler of the Gemini Sagittarius. And the Earth is placed in Gemini decanate of Libra in the second, in the fifth house. So Uranus in the third or Gemini house brings focus on the etheric body and its structure. It means the nadi system, meridians, chakras, breath, pranic vitality, and breathing exercises. That is another important area when that Uranus in direct motion actually start to move through that third house, even though it's operating there already. Because Uranus, Gemini, and Earth are the primary conditioning energies of the etheric body, and now we see them linking through the retrograde planets, houses, signs, and the interception of the polarity. Okay? Obviously, the fifth house is also related to vitality through that Leo energy. And if we look natally, Uranus making a trine from Leo to the Aries Sun. Okay. Now, April 20, 1930. This is just prior. Are we okay, Biel?
April 20, 1930.
Yes.
Yes, we're good.
This is a prior. She received her first instruction in November 1931. But you see, she was already, you know, in contact with the master, as all the disciples. Not only, you know, at the month and date of the first instruction. That is just, those who were editing these notes had to put some, you know, dates. What we see in April from 20 to 21, the progressed Mercury in 29 Gemini 45, moving through the 12th house of subjectivity, has turning retrograde. Could you put it on 21 day, next day?
There
you see that? So here we have a planet who she was born with in a direct motion. Can you point out that natal Mercury in Aries? But at this date, April 21, 1930, just when she was already dealing with her master, this progress Mercury going through Gemini, remembering that DK is under strong Gemini, and Mercury, the most knowledgeable master, and it's turning back towards the 12th house, where it had to fulfill a very important function, this planet. Because if it didn't turn retrograde, it would have moved into the first house, right? So what we are learning here are deeper meaning and significances between a changing of a direction of a planet from direct to retrograde or from retrograde to direct. And at a particular stages in our life and of the past. Because we're dealing with esoteric astrology here, okay? Even though up to this point, okay, major happenings were happening, okay, on a personality level and problems in relation to the personality. And now is entering a powerful soul coming up, bringing the intercepted sign energies to the surface, and the retrograde planets moving inwards. Okay? Now, on January 15, 1933,
okay.
Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. The progressed Mercury in the 29 Gemini, actually, you don't see the minutes, but it was exactly 29 Gemini 29, was making its first contact since it turned retrograde, by forming an exact semi-sextile to the natal Mars in 29 Taurus 29, also placed in the 12th house. Now, this is an important contact because it is bringing together two planets in the critical degrees of the last degrees of the signs, in the area of subjectivity. This is a plane, this is a soul on its own plane we're talking about, and of karmic adjustments area. It is the retrograde Mercury here, moving on the inner levels, shifting the mass energy and aiding in the process of integration of the astral body represented by the Mars, a very difficult, you know, a body for her, with the mental body represented Mercury, indicating that it is the mind as the highest aspect of the personality, which is the integrating aspect of the three lower bodies. But in this inner level of the soul, it is the soul which is the integrating factor here, okay? Utilizing the mind. It is the illumined mind. And now we can understand the rather unexpected statement from DK in the instruction of the same year, 1933, but in June instruction, when he made this statement. The integration between your mental body and your emotional or astral body has also been very poor lately. Now, I like the word lately. Lately, you have changed that condition, and your mind and your astral body are now integrated. Now, if we didn't examine this aspect from the perspective we are now examining them, Because when we were looking at this instruction, we were looking at different aspects in that chart. But we did mention this connection between the Mercury and Mars, but from a different perspective, okay? Because this aspect is also operating from a different level in the third instruction, which we were dealing now in a previous webinar and which we are still dealing with, where, you know, the progressed Mars was in exact aspect to the natal Mercury, and he was telling her, don't talk too much. Now is the time to act. Okay? So, you know, the same contact sometimes, or similar contacts, can be interpreted from number of different levels. Okay? Because this progressed Mercury in its direct motion has made already this same aspect to the natal Mars, which we are considering now, in the year 1927, but we're not going into that, I'm just mentioning it. But she was not ready at that time to utilize the inner or soul energies, you see. And now this is the point for us, very important, the distinction between a direct and retrograde motion of a planet, making exactly the same aspect, okay? Because now the Mercury, drawing the mind upon the higher mental plane, and activates the abstract mind and the soul level, and linking the retrograde Mercury to its natal placement in Aries, powerful soul placement, which rules the higher mental plane, Aries, and the Capricorn house, 10 house. It's the highest level of the mind there represented. So you see, even when we find such a powerful placement of a planet in an esoteric placement like Mercury in Aries, it does not automatically mean we are utilizing that energy. But it is a potential to do so. Okay? It entirely is dependent at which stage of the path we are in, okay, and where is our level of consciousness polarized. These are the fundamentals in order to interpret anything in the chart. Because Mars, you see, is the exoteric ruler of that Aries. And coming now into contact with the retrograde Mercury, linking to its original placement in Aries, drawing the Mars exoteric energy or personality energy of Aries towards the higher mental planes of the Mercury in Aries. Okay, and actually linking Mercury to Scorpio and activating also the Buddha. And all this is supported by the solar arc nodal axis in 23 Taurus Scorpio, Taurus polarity. Okay? Because they are in the what degree there?
23.
Okay. because they are activating the natal of Mercury in 8 Aries 45. Exactly. Natal Mercury at 8 degrees. Okay? I think by semi-square and sesquiquadrate aspect, the nodal axis. Okay? So we have the nodal axis involved in relation to that natal Mercury in Aries. Okay? And that brings the natal Mars in Taurus into relation to Scorpio also. And the transiting Chiron in Taurus over the solar arc nodal axis, and the natal Mercury making exactly the same aspect, semi-square. Okay? Now, if you bring the wheel to the 11th December 1934, we are coming now to the third instruction, which, you know, we are finalizing in this webinar.
Okay.
Retrograde progressed Mercury in 28 Gemini 59 forms an exact contact with the solar arc Neptune at 28 Gemini 59 in the 12th house, and making a T-square with the natal nodal axis at 28 Virgo Pisces. You see that? It's a T-square with that conjunction there. It's quite remarkable, really. You know, that all these aspects are happening at these very important times in her life in relation to all these, you know, points, houses and signs which we are, you know, being emphasized continuously. And at the same time, the solar arc ascendant at 1 degree Virgo 07 makes an exact square to the natal retrograde Jupiter in 1 degree Sagittarius in the sixth house. If we realize that the time of birth, you know, it had to be really rectified in order to make these contacts, particularly the ascendant with heaven, in such a precision together with the rest. Okay? And how important it is to have a correct birth time, which I have rectified up to now to the 9 hours, 43 minutes, and 20 seconds. Okay? Now, this combination of energies indicates, I am referring now to this Neptune Mercury T square to the natal nodal axis primarily, the contact with the soul on its own plane, and reflecting DK's statements in this 3rd June 1934 instruction, when he says to her, "The very love of your soul, represented here by the Jupiter-Neptune ascendant, particularly relationship, must be called in. The very love of your soul must be called in. And therefore, soul contact, Mercury, Neptune, the nodal axis, T square, is your solution. Persist it steadily, Sagittarian, one-pointed energy, throughout each day. Sixth house of everyday routine activity. You see this sentence? It's completely related to all what we are discussing here. The sixth house is the routine of our work, everyday work. She has to keep this contact every day and making her basic life routine. Now, would you believe we have just came to the 1.5 hour time, and I have concluded this presentation, which I think is very important and valuable asset and a tool for us to utilize together with the rest of the energetic levels of the chart. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, we have a question. Malia says, thank you. Brilliantly computed and expressed. Suzanne says, so a chart with all other planets retrograde, including Chiron, and a 3-9 interception in houses 3-9, Cancer, Capricorn, means a lot of work to do, I would assume.
I would assume too.
She says, lots of unfinished business.
Yes.
Question mark there.
But you see, now you have a method how to approach that, to understand what needs to be done, but primarily from your own stage of the path. And that is a vital point here. Okay?
And she says, thank you for your inspired efforts. Okay, we have a hand over here. Please go ahead, Eva.
Hi, Elena.
Hi, Eva.
question about the process for those of us that have not been schooled on the technicalities of how to work with these charts. So you work with the dates that are given by the master's instructions. You worked with the father's date of his death. So within that, what do you do? Do you go month by month to see what the aspects are? Do you go forward and backward?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes, exactly.
My question was going to be, are you looking for something specific, or are you looking for what aspects work out well, and then you interpret them?
First of all, for this exercise today, I have checked all the dates which we have available for any happenings in her life. Okay?
Right.
And then I want you to see in relation to the retrograde planets, intercepted signs and the nodes and all this, you know, what we've been looking, how and to what degree, you know, what that operating. Okay, that's how I, for example, her day of marriage, very important information. Her death of her father, very important information to see this process, you see. My main purpose was to see the process at the important dates in her life, and I selected the exact contacts to the day, you see, to see this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, because I knew what I was looking for, and that makes a difference in approach to the interpretation of the chart.
Right.
My own experience is I know what I am looking for.
Right. I know you've said that many times.
Yes.
You know what you're looking for, and that's what I'm asking. So you knew what you were looking for on some of the dates, but on others, you just went forward and backwards to see what contacts were made.
Yes, because I wanted to discover the aspects, these changing motions of these planets were making and at which date, okay, and what was happening in her life, okay? And that's why the significance, you know, was amazing even for me, which emerged, you know, when all these different levels of these energies were coming together, mm-hmm. you see, with precision.
It took you hours, I am sure.
And oh, yes, it's very, very time-consuming process.
I am sure. And I for sure so much appreciate this because it gives me such greater insight on how to approach working with a chart in this kind of way. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. So thank you very much.
Appreciate it. I am happy that people can take something from this and utilize it not only in their own processes, but, you know, in other people's chart and so on.
So okay. Let me take one step forward. If we were to take our own chart and let's say we put in the date of marriage, the date of a death of a parent, we play around with that as well?
You see,
get contacts?
Yes. I mean, you know, I checked, you know, she had two daughters, and both of them were twice married. And I checked all these dates. But okay. You see, you discover that different aspects were operating, different planetary aspects, for one to the other. Not the same, you see. So we cannot say that, you know, for the birth and of daughters, that you would find the same planets. No, because it depends on the character of that individual, okay, mm-hmm. which has to represent it through that energy. And obviously her daughters were very different, and I discovered that through this exercise, you see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like okay. I had a great insight into her marriage through this exercise, because it took me in the depths, in a greater detail, you see. And that's why, you know, I would recommend, you know, to start to use these different motions, intercepting houses, and the nodal axes are very important. Okay?
Something that we don't pay too much attention to.
Yes. Because they are contacts. Mm-hmm. Nodes are contacts in the past, in the future, in the present. And it's a very karmic relationships, usually.
See? Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Nice to have you here, Eva.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoy it. I listen to all of them when I can, but when I can't attend, I listen to it when we get that the link to it.
Yes, because, you know, one has to go in one own time, you know, in one own space and looking more carefully in all this, okay? Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't see any other questions. So if there aren't any, then I will say goodbye to everyone. And thank you, Elena. It's very fascinating to watch you go through this. And it's even harder to be your little scribe here sometimes.
Thank you, BL, for all your work you've done and your patience. And thank you, everybody, for participating. I hope I inspired you to some new area of work here.
Oh, we have another question here really quickly. Thank you. Malia also says thank you to me. But all right, so good night, everybody, or good day or good morning, depending on where you are. see you next time.
Yes.
Our next one is the 8th of October.
Okay, thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.